Today's show, presented by Prime Video, we got a scrap at the SEC Women's Basketball Tournament. We had controversy over college football playoff funding. We got a wild story about the Italian Mafia and backup Vanderbilt quarterbacks. And we got quite a crime up in Green Bay, or criminal, or alleged criminal. You'll find out.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I'm just saying, once you go down this road, you break it, you own it. And these guys are breaking things. And they're on the verge of breaking really big things. And there's more than a spreadsheet here.
Ross Dellinger.
A lot of people have been approached probably at Jason Aldean's Nashville bar. or they think they were approached, but they were really hammered.
And SI's Pat 40.
This is an inevitable self-fulfilling prophecy of those two breaking away by just taking more and more and more away from everyone else. And, you know, it's soulless. It is gluttonous. It is ruinous. And it also seems inevitable.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Prime Video. They're taking care of us here in March Madness. And let me tell you, gentlemen, I could not be more excited here. This Monday morning in March dawns an hour early, of course, because that's stupid law we have. But it dawns with me in a very, very good mood because LSU and South Carolina women's basketball teams got in a kerfuffle. Dare I say some are describing it as a brawl, which I felt was a little bit much. But who cares?
We did have a fan come from the stands, Dan.
Yes, some player's brother jumped the table to get in. That don't do that. The players want to get after it, though. I'm here for.
There's nothing that puts pep in Dan's voice quite like a fight.
This is what we need.
Basketball, whatever.
This is women's basketball is on fire right now. Caitlin Clark's out there just humiliating people, jacking up shots from the logo, flopping, yelling at the refs. She works the refs like Bill Laimbeer back in the day. Like, she is relentless. South Carolina undefeated season. They're scrapping with this LSU team that's got too much personality. They're like a reality TV show.
There's a little extra with this LSU team.
Love it. Give me all the extra.
A Kim Mulkey team is a little extra? No.
Yeah.
She's talking about a on-court brawl while wearing like sequins. And I don't even know what that jacket was. I don't want to disrespect the jacket by describing it wrong. You look great, Kim. You look great, coach. Bring it. I want all of it. I want all the drama, all the fights. I want all the anticipation. These two better match up. That selection committee better not get all weak and not match these two up in the Elite Eight. We want the rematch. We want the brawl. The sport is great. This is one of my favorite and least favorite things in journalism occurred. Game marred by brawl. It's never marred by a brawl. It is never. No. If someone gets,
it's highlighted like, by a brawl.
It's a highlighted. Yes, it is. It's like,
why
if somebody,
are we talking about the game because of the brawl?
Because of the brawl. Like, you know what? Like, what was it? Rudy Tomjanovich got sucker punch. You don't want anyone injured.
Yeah, no, that was bad. That was bad.
That's a marring. Other than that, everyone's running around going, see the LSU South Carolina women? They got in a fight. Yes, I'm a hockey fan. When I was growing up, I'm a hockey fan because they'd get in a fight in the game, the bench clearing brawl, and then the newspaper would say the game was marred, and we'd run to school and talk about the brawl. I want more brawls, more scrap. This is post you go girl. We're in on it now. It's real stuff now. Yeah, go girl. You go, girl, and if you got to deck the other girl, go ahead.
This rivalry between LSU women and South Carolina women has been incredible for women's basketball in I'm trying to compare it to like something in the sport, you know, going back, I guess, to Tennessee UConn, you know, would be the closest comparison. But it has just gotten so heated. And the two coaches, as we saw in the post game of the post game news conference, they're completely different. In a lot of ways, their teams are completely different. And just just a fun rivalry that has brewed the last couple years.
So when the I believe it was the ESPN announcer, when this all kind of blew up on the court, when the announcer said, "Oh, we don't want to see that," Dan Wetzel's like, no, we want to see more."
I happened to be at a bowling
insider of violence.
I was at a bowling alley bar at the time.
Oh boy.
And the game was on in the corner. I was not bowling. I was barring.
Of course you were barring.
Lounge. It's called a lounge. Bowling alley lounge.
You were lounging.
I was lounging. So the game was on and no one was really watching the game, but it was on, which is great. And then all of a sudden we got the scrap and now everybody at the lounge is no longer lounging. They're getting fired up over this thing.
Fighting brings people together, Dan.
Dana White of the UFC says his sport's primal. It's from the caves. And he says if you had, it'll be the last minute of the Super Bowl, NBA Finals, whatever event you want. Final minute. And if two drunks are getting a fist fight in the upper deck, everyone turns around and tries to watch the fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's why his sport will never fail. And I'm all for it. No, it was heated. There was a shove, whatever. The good part was Kim Mulkey just not backing down. Like,
never.
You know, Dawn Staley says the right things. It's like she does, right? This is what you're supposed to say. We don't want to be a part. What was her quote? She had some very nice, like, good, responsible quotes.
Yeah, but Dawn Staley will get fiery too now.
I'm not messing with North Philly now. We're not messing with North Philly. No. Okay, now yeah. I'm not saying that.
In this instance, she may have said the quote-unquote right things, but she will get after it.
Absolutely. But that's, you know, in a locker room, I don't think. But yeah, she said, but Kim Mulkey, look, no one wants to be a part of that. That's what Kim Mulkey said. No one wants to see that ugliness. I disagree, but to each their own. But I can tell you this, I wish she would have pushed Angel Reese. Don't push a kid. You're 6'8". Don't push somebody that little. Those two girls that were jogging, let them go at it. Yes. We don't want to see this, but I'm going to amp it up.
Yeah.
Am I a bad person, Pat?
Well, yeah, you're a terrible person. That's been established for years here, so we're not breaking new ground here. But no, look, if we're going to cover women's basketball like a legitimate sport, then you cover all of it, the good and the bad, the crazy, the weird, and this qualifies as crazy and weird. I can't remember seeing a brawl where a fan jumped out of the stands, and it was Flo J Johnson, I believe, brother apparently came out. She was the one that got decked by Camila Cardoso.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to get arrested, but
LSU,
family.
I think LSU had said he didn't get arrested, but I think the advocate of Baton Rouge just put out a report this morning with the arrest report. He was arrested, apparently.
Yeah,
got to stick up for your sister, right?
That's
but
you know, worth the arrest. Yes, worth the arrest.
Yeah, but you're going to get arrested. No, stay in the stands. Let Angel Reese come in and solve this problem.
Then we could have really had some fireworks if Angel Reese and 6'7" Camila Cardoso had squared off. But as it is, like, all right, so Cardoso is going to be suspended assuredly for the first round of the NCAA tournament, right? That won't matter because South Carolina is going to play some cadaver. Yeah. But I guess everybody else who got ejected is going to be okay to play. So from that standpoint, there's no lingering effects here. It is fascinating. And you go back, like, look, one of the things that put the Big East on the map in the early 80s was they would go to blows. I mean, they wouldn't just play hard and go after each other, but there were fights. There were Georgetown squaring off with St. John's. Rick Barnes punched a fan once when he was the coach at Providence. I mean, it was a feisty league. So if you want to see, if you want to get people, casual people, talking about women's basketball, put on the Caitlin Clark highlights and then put on this. And people are like, whoa, what the heck is going on in women's hoops?
I might tune in. This out. Yeah, this Final Four could be great. Imagine if they all made it.
Woo.
Imagine if we got South Carolina, LSU, Iowa, UConn, or something like that. I mean, usually the best teams get there.
Yeah. Well, that is the kind of fascinating thing about the two events, the women's tournament and the men's tournament. In the men's tournament, we seem to always be rooting for the underdog and want the Cinderella story. In the women's tournament, we want the big programs and the fiery coaches and the top seeds to get there. And normally, as Dan just mentioned, right, it happens a lot. It happened last year, right? It's that's what you kind of need. And I mean, the LSU team and its coach Kim Mulkey, and the South Carolina team and its coach. There's a lot of incredible personalities right now in women's college basketball, and really good players. And you know, NIL with Angel Reese and all that. The NIL has only made it more, I think, highlighted the players. And it's been really, really fun to watch. I think somebody maybe wrote a column or something, Pat might remember it, earlier this year, about how the men's basketball right now doesn't have as many great players or noteworthy players or great teams, and the women are kind of encroaching in a way. And we could see that maybe play out in the tournament too.
Well, they've got a lot of great storylines on the women's side, no doubt about it. And yes, they just added another one. But I mean, South Carolina is undefeated,
yeah,
which is impressive. But what a weekend they had! First of all, I mean, they had a difficult quarterfinal game, and then the way they won their semifinal against Tennessee—that was a talking point in and of itself. They're down; they blew like a 25-point lead, and they're down two with 1 second left. Throw the ball into Cardoso. She had quite a weekend.
She's 6'7". She is, right?
Never made a three. She had shot one and missed it. She gets the ball. Tennessee.
They didn't guard her at all.
Tennessee, like, absolutely just declined.
Crazy.
They declined to play. It's unbelievable. Like, they
opted
just, like,
out.
Don't get called for a foul. That was it. Cardoso shooting. Let her shoot.
Yeah, but, you know, you might want to at least be within 5 feet of her and put a hand up. It's a thought. But
was
no,
strategy.
She like is wide open, banked it in, keeps the undefeated season alive, and then comes back and absolutely decks an LSU player next day. Wow.
That's it. This is what we need. Stanford's good. Ohio State. Women's college basketball is easy for people to casually follow because there's only a few teams. And there's only a few star players. So you can get into it. And they're there and the kids come back and all of that. So they got a few things going. Anyway, could not be more excited. Could not be more excited about this. We're going to get to men's college basketball later. We have some more. We're going to talk more about lack of stars and all of that, among other things. Larry Blurred. But we do want to get to the most important story going, because it only determines the future of college athletics in general. And that is whatever the hell the commissioners are doing in their various meetings and deliberations, including how they will divvy up the massive revenue pie of the college football playoff. We had a meeting last week that Ross, I think, had two. We had two developments. One, there seems to be a cooling to the atrocious idea of the SEC and Big Ten getting automatic buys. Seems to be cooling. I believe you reported that. And then also uneven revenue distribution that would favor the Big Ten and SEC. Give us the details.
Yeah, we're entering a very big week for the CFP. They whether ESPN gave them an exact deadline or not kind of remains a little unclear, but they've put an internal deadline on by the end of the week, by Friday, to come to an agreement on a revenue distribution model for a new contract, so then they can finalize the ESPN extension. Starting in 2026 and going through 31, an extra 6 years on top of the two that we have left under the current contract. So they're trying to zero in on this revenue distribution model. trying to figure it out. Friday we reported some numbers that had started, as you might expect, right, leaking out because conferences socialize the revenue model that they're looking at with everybody in their league. So naturally, it's going to seep out. And we all expected, right, we've been talking about this for over a month, the SEC and Big Ten to get a bigger piece of the pie. I'm not sure anybody expected them to get this big of a piece of the pie. So it gets a little complicated with the numbers, but the current deal calls for the Power Five conferences to split evenly 80% of the revenue that the CFP makes. 80% split among the Power Five, each get about a 17% cut, something like that. The new proposal, which is just a proposal, but I would be surprised if it changes. If it changes drastically, I'd be very surprised. It calls for the Big Ten and the SEC to split around at 58% of the revenue. So again, it currently 80% is split among the five. Now we have two conferences earning 58%. So they're kind of on another tier now, permanent. It kind of draws a permanent line between them two and everybody else. So they get around 29% each conference to split among their members. And then the Big 12 and the ACC are next. They're combined for around 31-32%. And the ACC is above the Big 12 by about 2.5%. I think it's 17, around 17%, and around like 14.5%. When you talk about ACC Big 12, and then you drop down again, of course, and you get Notre Dame, which is around, I think, maybe a little slightly less than 1%. And then about 9% is distributed among all the 64 group of five teams. So that's kind of the percent breakdown. I know a lot of folks will probably be even more interested in the actual figures in the money breakdown. So per school in the SEC is $23 million. Each SEC school will get about $23 million. That is four times the amount that they get now. They get $6 million now. Four times the amount. They'll get $23 million. Big Ten schools, $21 million. This is annual payouts. ACC is about $3.7 million. Big 12 is about $12.3 per school. And then the G5 is around 1.8, 1.9, something like that. Now, nobody is, despite the change in percentages, no one's CFP distribution is going down because the CFP went from making on their TV deal $460 million a year to $1.3 billion with a B because of the expansion and the new deal with ESPN or the impending new deal. So that's kind of the breakdown of the percentages and the numbers. I think in the grand scheme of things here, which was a lot what our story was about, is how does the Big Ten and SEC now being put on a pedestal, right? On a financial, just complete different financial tier. How does it impact the rest of college athletics? And what does it mean for the future? And I kind of honed in on the ACC, seeing how the ACC is in a kind of unstable, uncertain position and how this could incentivize more programs to mainly leave. And I'll say one more thing about before throwing it to Pat here is the format, which you discussed quite a bit, is kind of taking a back seat to the revenue model. We talked about that a little bit on the last pod, but the format, there's about, from what I understand, what I've reported in that story, there's kind of three formats that have come to light being bantered around. And Dan, you're right. I think the public outcry over the guaranteed buys for the SEC in Big Ten has kind of tabled that discussion on the buys. I don't know that it's completely over, but certainly I think there's enough pushback, you know, to table it. So the three formats, though, overall is the one we discussed and reported on a couple weeks ago. Three automatic qualifiers each for the Big Ten and SEC, two for the ACC in Big 12, one for the group of five, three at large. And then the second is kind of a similar model to that, except not as many AQs. So it's two each for Big 12 SEC, one each for ACC, or Big 10 SEC, two each. Big 12 ACC get one each, group of five, one. and then you have seven at large. And then the last format kind of in discussion is, instead, right now we have a 5 plus 7 for the next 2 years, 5 automatic qualifiers, 7 at large, 5 highest ranked conference champions get the automatic qualifiers. They're discussing a 5 plus 9, 9 at large, 5 automatic qualifiers. So there's kind of the gist of it. Big week for the CFP.
Well, I'm certainly glad to hear that the SEC and Big Ten are trying to get more for themselves. They've been struggling, so it's great.
They Happy also share. Sounds like,
a, sounds they like share a, something nice.
Yeah, they share a Groupon account, I think, too.
Yeah.
Get through.
Yeah. Happy for those little plucky startups there. Yeah. Explain this to me like I'm 5, Ross. Why can't they simply do the annual revenue distribution based on what the conference has actually put in the playoff, as opposed to predetermining
why performance they should based, get... Right. Yeah. There was discussion. I think even the Big 12 had put forth maybe a thought that, because there is right now, there is performance based distribution, right? It's going to be in the current proposal. It only makes up though 100 million of the 1.3 billion. And what I'm led to believe is that each participating team will get $3 million for the first round for just qualifying, and then $3 million for the second round, and then I think 5 and 5. Now, those numbers could definitely change. But there is a performance distribution structure, but there was a suggestion from, again, the Big 12, maybe some others in the room, to increase those amounts by double, triple, even quadruple. And instead of the performance distribution accounting for $100 million, of the 1.3 billion, maybe it accounts for 400 or 500 million. Seems like a good idea. I don't exactly know what happened. It's a great question because it would seem to be fair. And the thing is, at the end of the line, the Big 12 and SEC, because of the teams they have and the value they bring, they probably are going to get what they're asking for, but they're going to get it in an earned way. So yes. I don't know exactly what happened. I remember, I talked to somebody a couple weeks ago and thought, hey, why don't y'all just do it all by distribution? Of course, that shut down immediately because there would be conferences that would never see a dime, especially in the group of five. But at least they could do where 40 or 50% of the distribution is performance-based. But for whatever reason, they have decided not to go that route.
Whatever reason.
Yeah, whatever reason, because the Big Ten and SEC told them that's the way it's going to be. It just is amazing to me, their ability to bully their way into more and more advantages. I mean, this is an inevitable self-fulfilling prophecy of those two breaking away by just taking more and more and more away from everyone else. And, you know, it's soulless, it is gluttonous, it is ruinous, and it also seems inevitable.
You know, I think, you know, not to make this too dramatic, but I'm going to make it pretty dramatic because this is just symptom of what we're seeing over and over. And I think Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, I'm not sure Petitti cares, but maybe Sankey does. And some of these ADs in their leagues that are pushing for this need to really take a thought on whether they want to go down in history as the people that ended is a bit much, but dramatically altered how college athletics works in this country.
Yeah.
Because these are these kind of decisions, not the crap they're going to talk about on Capitol Hill, not NIL, not a transfer portal, not that stuff. Conference realignment and uneven revenue distribution and ridiculous advantages and getting away from competition and some level of fair play is what will end this operation. And that's what they're treading on. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they just want more guaranteed money for themselves. Maybe they don't care if Pac-12's gone. They don't care if the ACC's gone. They don't care if the Big 12's gone. They don't care. They don't really care. That's fine. I can't get them to care.
but they will go down as the ones that killed this, because right now they have confused the public and confused the politicians that this is about players getting money to go to a college, some recruit getting, choosing this college or that, or Angel Reese getting money. I don't even know what they're upset about. God knows what they're going to say in this week's hearing. That ain't it. It's conference realignment, and it's stuff like this. It's a very, very clear and obvious way to do this, and they're choosing not to do it. And they're doing that maybe at the behest of their networks. I don't know. But they're the last line of defense that says we're not going to further destabilize the ACC. We're not going to do this. We're going to do what's best for college athletics as a whole, which in the past has been something that people cared about. Now, if you don't want to care about it, you just want to blow it all up because you're going to get a little bit bigger piece of the pie, that is fine. But that's how you're going to go down remembered. And so, I don't know. There isn't a whole lot you can do, but hope that the general welfare of the entire sport that they are shepherding, this entire pursuit that matters an enormous amount to so many of us, there is consideration for that, not just how do I get an extra $250,000 out of this thing.
Yeah. I agree. I've seen no indication that Petiti cares, right? He's a TV guy who's not come up in the college space, who makes deals to the advantage of wherever he's working. Sankey's the one that surprises me, because he has a track record of caring about the entire enterprise and involved himself in 9 million committees and the committee on infractions, everything else to try to, you know, steward college athletics forward in seemingly a way that would work for everyone. And now that there's no evidence that still seems to be on his agenda.
We can only hope. I mean, that's the thing. Like he was kind of that last defense you could count on, and maybe it'll still be there. But Petiti's a disruptor. He's here to wreck things. And he's wrecking, you know, and that's what he's doing. Fine. I mean, I'm not in charge of these guys, but so yeah, I don't have any faith in him. Maybe he surprises me. Maybe not. We'll see. But Sankey, we'll see how it all plays out in the end. But they're going down a road that they will not be remembered well for.
Let me give some background on how they came. I forgot to mention this earlier. How they came up with the distribution percentages. It's largely based on historic success by each conference in the playoff, like since it was four teams. So the previous decade is kind of what they used, from what I understand. And they considered future realignment moves. So in the calculations, Oklahoma and Texas accounted for the SEC, USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon accounted for Big Ten, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, Big 12, etc. So I'll give kind of the numbers. The SEC led all conferences with 17 participants in the field over the last 10 years. That's 40 total, so almost half of the field. The Big Ten followed with 12. ACC had 7, and the Big 12 had 2. SEC, Big Ten accounted for 72.5% of all the participants. So that's how they got there. Not that we all obviously agree.
That's
on
fine.
The numbers,
that makes sense. It makes sense that historically, yes. And guess what? It's likely to be that way in the future. Just earn it. Mm. Yeah. Once you codify revenue distribution as unequal, it is a different deal. Once you codify buys in the playoff as unequal, it's different. The Big Ten and the SEC are going to dominate this playoff. We know that. That's fine. Good. I'm excited for the playoff. I'm excited for all of it. Go earn your money. But once you start doing this, you are telling those leagues, everyone in that league, get the hell out of your league.
Yeah.
And we just destroyed the Pac-12 for not really a good reason. Because Fox wanted more games. Because the NBC had bought into a third Big Ten package and realized that they're going to get a whole lot of Minnesota Purdue. Like, okay, so we're going to destroy that. You're going to destroy something else. So that's fine. You're going to earn the money. I have no problem with it. I fully expect the SEC and the Big Ten to dominate this playoff. Good. No one's sitting there going, gosh, we got to get a fair share to the Sun Belt. I'm just saying, once you go down this road, you break it, you own it. And these guys are breaking things. And they're on the verge of breaking really big things. And there's more than a spreadsheet here. And I hope it at least the commissioners that have been around in college athletics a long time and have heretofore represented that sensibility continue to at least advocate for their leagues and stuff like that in an appropriate manner for the good of the entire sport. Because I don't think if it breaks, you can't just put it back together and it's the full sport. And right. It's just, it's very tenuous times. I mean, we go through every week, we do the same thing now. And something changed dramatically in the last year. Something changed absolutely dramatically. So the public focus, and I know there's a Washington hearing we talk about later in the week because we got too much other stuff, is all on the players. But this is the stuff that's ruining the sport.
Yep.
And the you mentioned destabilizing the ACC, and it's something I wrote about in that story, how this could incentivize more teams to leave.
Of course.
Most notably, you know, some of the seven that got together last
spring. Why would you stay in a league that's paying you less?
Right. Think about the differences of between the SEC, a CFP payout, and an ACC CFP payout is roughly $10 million. We got 23 million per SEC school, around 14 million per ACC school in this proposal. So around 10 million
a year
is a year per school. Year. Yep.
That's besides the TV revenue difference. I mean, you're
besides it. TV on top of TV,
right.
Which is probably going to eventually be 30 million. Right. It's probably going to be 15 to 20 in the short term. So in 5 years, right, under this proposal, an SEC school will be making as much as $40 million more than an ACC school. And that's why you obviously see what Florida State's doing. And this CFP distribution proposal is probably going to incentivize more, namely Clemson. But what I want to get at is something raised to me over the weekend by a few people, and it's something we talked about on the pod plenty before, and that is the alliance. 2 years ago, the ACC and Pac-12 had in front of them a deal in the Big Ten. Had in front of them a deal, and they delayed it a year and a half.
We screamed at them at the time to take it.
Had they taken the deal, yeah, this will probably look a lot different.
But are we all have to be adversaries like we're trying to buy a car? Like you could have bought the car for $10,000 last week. It's 20 now. Tough break.
That's right.
Like is this draft day where you're like, you're in a different world than we were. You got to throw in, one more first round pick. I want all my picks back. Do we have to have it that way? Yes. The ACC screwed it up. The Pac-12 screwed it up. The Big Ten is destroying them both. But do we have to sit there and go, well, you dumbasses? Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
But
you termed it the original sin, Dan, in all of this, and it was. But there's been a lot of sins committed since then. And do we have to just keep committing sins, or can we get back to trying to at least have some sense of a fair national playing field?
This can't be just like industry where we're just, let's just pummel them to death. And it's like you screwed up. Now I'm going to pummel you to death. It's like, let's keep this operation going. I don't know. We're going to find out.
One last thing about the ACC.
Okay.
Like stability and all that. There will be, at least in the proposal, there's a look-in provision in 2028 where that really is in there for conference realignment purposes. But if there's any conference realignment before 2028, it triggers the look-in. So the contract can be reopened. And I'm guessing that's in there because of the situation in the ACC. Because if you think at the ACC without a Clemson, without a Florida State, without maybe even a North Carolina or Miami is going to get the same money or the same access even in a playoff format, you'd be crazy, right? So there's a look-in provision there right now, at least in the proposal, which was apparently, as we reported, encouraged strongly by the Big 12 leaders, which is interesting. So.
Yeah, right. I mean, the Big 12 was definitely asking for a look-in there, I think, because that was one of the keys to getting them to largely support the Big 10 SEC power play. It's like, okay, but we're going to have to, we need a window into this thing after a few years to see how it's going.
All right, we'll be back right after this message. All right, weird story we're going to get to here. You guys remember the college football career of Mo Hassan? Oh, maybe you don't.
No.
Okay. he was a backup quarterback at Vanderbilt. And then later at USC. And the other day, he was talking on a podcast, and he came up with this juicy item. He played quarterback at Vandy from 2018 and 2019. Then he did 2020 and 2021 at USC. He said, I was approached at Jason Aldean's bar in Nashville. Try that in a small town, right? Approached at Jason Aldean's bar in Nashville by the Italian mob to fix football games. This is Mo Hassan. I went to get drinks, and so I'm alone right now because he left his table with the friends, and I'm not with my friend group. He comes up to me. He offered me $300,000. He said, for something like this, you know, my clients, $250,000 to $300,000 for a game. He said, we regularly talk to guys in your position about fixing games. He said he named guys in the SEC who, I don't want to say their names because they're in the NFL right now, and that's a bad look. That's a bad deal. But University of Alabama, he said almost every game in the SEC is rigged. This was his comments. I think I'm just going to, I don't know if I'm going to even wait for you guys. Mo Hassan threw 17 passes at Vanderbilt.
That's right. I was just looking up his stats. There ain't many.
Mm-mm. $300K to not play. I wonder what they're paying the starters. You know, I'm not an expert on the Italian mob. I'm not really sure that operation exists, but I have seen Goodfellas numerous times.
There you go. That's
big
close
Godfather
enough.
Fan.
Mm-hmm.
the story makes zero sense. Hassan may be murdered. If Mo Hassan is still alive right now, the story isn't true. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Some guy comes up and says, "Oh, we're fixing games on," and these are the he names the other players.
Yeah.
So you're just going to give away the gig? I got apparently the University of Alabama rigging football games
sure
for me, but I'm going to tell this backup QB at Jason Aldean's bar in Nashville all about it? Who could just go to the FBI? Sure. I can't even wait to tear this thing apart. Could I be wrong, Pat? Could this be a true story?
No. I think we need to check Mo Hassan's concussion history or something, because that's the craziest thing I've heard in quite a while. If you're going to try to fix a game in the SEC, finding the backup QB at Vandy randomly at a bar is probably not going to be the best avenue to get it done. I'm just going to guess that that's the case, you know. Going to be tough for him to fix a game from the bench where he's watching Vandy get trucked by whoever, as they tend to do. So I'm going to go with no on this. And yeah, Mo Maybe he's got a career as a screenplay writer or something, but he's coming up with fiction here.
A lot of people have been approached probably at Jason Aldean's Nashville bar, or they think they were approached, but they were really hammered. I'm just saying.
I've been there.
I was approached a few times.
It was the band trying to get money. They come around with a bucket.
Yeah, right.
That's what they do. Yeah, that's right.
Tip the band. Yeah.
This story, it just bothers me because it just gets aggregated, right?
Yeah, like who, what, like why?
And everyone reads it and goes, oh yeah, all the Italian mob's got all the SEC. Oh, University of Alabama. Let's just throw Alabama in there.
Sure.
Like there aren't real. Gee, I wonder which quarterbacks that are in the NFL were from the University of Alabama. Jeez, I.
Tua, just a, talk to me.
Just a rando group. Yeah. Come on, man. This story.
Also, Alabama did a bad job dumping games, right?
They didn't lose a lot. I don't know what they were against the spread, but no. Like, no. This isn't how you do it. You don't randomly walk up to a guy in a bar. It just said, you gave away the plot. You admitted. The guy admitted the entire thing to a random dude.
Not subtle.
No. That guy'd be dead. That guy's swimming with the fishes. Like, what is this? You can say anything these days. It's aggregated. People believe it. Like, it's just not a, this is not a thing. This was one of the more ridiculous stories. We're here to tell the truth. We're the fact checkers. I don't understand. Like, what was he trying to do? Get a tent? Is he trying to sell something?
No idea.
Hope they enjoyed the Jason Aldean catching a stray on that one.
Does feed into a little basketball story.
Does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. What is going on? Temple can't bet on a Temple game.
I think there might have been a line on Temple UTSA, which surprises me. I don't know. They played that Sunday, and that was after the Temple UAB game on last Thursday was taken off the board at a lot of books due to a unusual line movement that was flagged by U.S. Integrity, which is the kind of the gambling watchdog group that almost every conference now has a deal with. That line, the day Temple UAB, the line moved from UAB being favored by 1.5 to UAB being favored by 8 and then back down to 7, and UAB won by like 1,000. They won by 28. And there was also some concern, I think, about a line, the previous game, March 2nd, Tulsa at Temple, and Temple was favored by 5.5 and lost by 5. But the big thing was the first half line moved up 2 points, which is, you know, somewhat significant for a half. And the game started Tulsa up 16-2. So there's been scrutiny around Temple. There were some other games earlier that I think had aroused some suspicion. And yeah, I was told by sources that people have had their eyes on Temple for a while, and then things just got crazy with the UAB game. You know, is there direct proof? I don't know. Is there, you know, a smoking gun that says, okay, this book all of a sudden was $50,000 in action on Temple UAB? I don't think so. It seems like the line movements were fairly incremental, and I think there was money bet in a bunch of different locations. So this was, if the fix was in, it was probably fairly sophisticated. This was not the Dumb and Dumber guys from the Alabama baseball scandal. If there was something going on, it was probably fairly subtle. But, you know, just a huge reminder that with the proliferation of sports wagering, there's going to be more potential wagering issues. Now, the good news is it's all documented. It's very easy to see line movements and to figure out what's going on. And that's one thing that, where this isn't necessarily, oh my God, abolish sports betting, because it's easier to catch what's happening. It's not to say, you know, that there wasn't stuff going on with the illegal bookmakers. There sure as hell was. So it's fascinating to see, and we'll see if anything happens there. There was also there was a player at Loyola Maryland who was involved in some sort of wagering activity. Don't know what. He got dismissed, but there was something happening there. Temple, Loyola Maryland, both on the Atlantic seaboard. There was some question of whether there's a group of gamblers in that area that might be trying to influence things. Don't know, but it's been a little bit of a powder keg in the college basketball sphere.
Well, you are correct, and I'm glad you mentioned it. The more lines that are out there, the more the stuff is legal, the easier it is to catch it.
Yep.
And that's, a massive thing. They were fixing the games before. Also, it was easier to fix a game when the NCAA had draconian rules going down. And if, like, say, the Italian mafia handed somebody some cash just for the sake of handing them some cash at Jason Aldean's bar, the Italian mafia would then be able to blackmail that player with his eligibility for having anything to do with him. So the fewer rules we have, the better. In this case, I do not believe, although I could be wrong, I do not believe there is more game influencing now than there was before. I just think we're going to have more stories because it's easier to catch. But I don't know, but that's my theory. It's better to have transparency. They always said, I remember doing a lot of gambling stories. I remember even talking to Michael Francis, who fixed the Boston College. He was part of a Colombo crime, actual Italian mafia, about fixing the Boston College games back in the day. And long time ago. And for a story. And part of that was, you know, their enemy was Vegas, because if Vegas wants a square game, and the more they can monitor the lines. But back then, you could only bet on a game. You could only bet if you were inside a Vegas sports book. So their data was very, very limited. Now, with the phones and so many states legal, like, things can move quickly and everyone can flag it. So pretty interesting on all that.
Yeah, and that's the thing too with the Temple thing, that like, they should have all their information probably from all the books now, and getting a report together that may give us more indication of what actually happened or didn't happen there. Like, quickly, you know, so it's like, it's only been a few days, but this is not an NCAA investigation that's going to last 5 years.
Indiana State lost in Arch Madness to Drake. Congratulations to Drake, winning the Missouri Valley. Always fun event they have there. Great league. Great competitive league. But that means Larry Blurd, our favorite player, is on the bubble. Pat, should Indiana State get in anyway? I say yes, just for the storylines, the content. Mm-hmm. That's my bracketology. Whatever's best for me.
If Indiana State doesn't get in, we riot. That's what I say.
Let's go.
We
fight like LSU South Carolina. Like that.
That's right.
We're jumping the table like that player's brother. We're going.
They
in.
Will. I could foresee a caravan of attackers from Terre Haute heading east on I-70 to Indy.
Close.
Yeah, it's not far. It's like 75 miles. If Larry Blurd is not put into the bracket, yeah, I think they should be in now. Shoot, I checked Jerry Palm, CBS bracketology this morning. He not only doesn't have Indiana State in, he doesn't have them amongst the first four out. Joe Lenardi has them in the last four in. Either way, it's going to be a tense week for the Sycamores, hoping for no upsets in conference tournaments, you know, nobody coming in stealing bids. They're a really good team. They're a great story. They are very fun to watch. They are offensively spectacular. And if you watch the game against Drake, this is the thing where it helps to actually watch the games. I was there in person. Drake is very good. Drake is 28-6. Indiana State is 28-6. Drake shot the lights out and was up by 18 points with 10 minutes to play. With 4 minutes to play, Indiana State was winning. They erased an 18-point deficit in 6 minutes because they can go off like that. And then Drake made the plays at the end and wins. Great game. both very deserving teams. But in this climate where, you know, the scheduling is all skewed in favor of the power teams from the power conferences, Indiana State cannot get games. If they do, they're going to be on the road. They may luck into a neutral game or two, but all of their quad one games have been road games or been away from Terre Haute. You watch them. They're a great team. And if the NCAA, to your point, Dan, people have locked in on the Indiana State story. People have watched Robbie Avila, who is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is Larry Bird, who is Larry Nerd, who is College Jokic, if you want to go through the litany of nicknames. I mean, people are interested. If the NCAA wants to sit there in the room and say, oh, gosh, ratings aren't very good for men's games. You know, people are gravitating more towards the women. I guess we should probably put 17 and 14 Villanova in and leave this guy out. That probably wouldn't be a very good decision if you want to actually market your sport. They say that doesn't matter. We're just being fair here.
It shouldn't.
But do you want to put the best product on TV that people will watch? I don't think of the world sitting there clamoring, saying, God, we got to see 17 and 14 Villanova in Dayton. We really do. No, put in Indiana State. And first of all, just watch them play. They're good. Really good.
Pat's getting the key to the city in Terre Haute.
It's a key to the Ballyhoo bar that's right down the street from the Holman Center. I'll take that key.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That was it.
Such a great nickname. So what's your read, Pat? They get in or not?
I think they do. Now, it does require a little bit of breaking some eggs in terms of, you know, quad one victories and that sort of thing. But if in terms of NCAA net rating, this is the NCAA's own metric that they invented, they came up with. They're in the top 30. And to my knowledge, in the years that they've had the net, which is only like four or five or six or something, they've never been a top 30 team that hasn't gotten in. Mm. So I'm gonna say they get in, but I'm sure there will be a lot of discussion about this. It's going to be a big topic all week, and I feel sorry for the Indiana State players and coach Jason Schurz for who's going to be just kind of be twisting in limbo now till Selection Sunday.
I'm excited for the Palm Lunardi battle here.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Jerry Palm usually correct.
They have strong disagreement on the Sycamores.
Well, sure. It's going to be interesting. I fear that Jerry's going to be correct again. All right, bringing back a favorite here from the fall. Say something nice, you know?
Ah, all right.
We've said plenty of mean things on this podcast. Snarky. I've supported violence. I've accused people of making up Italian mafia stories. We've been grumpy a little, I think. We've been angry. We are what we are. But it's time to find our happy place and say something nice, courtesy of our friends at Prime Video. So tell me, Pat, can you say something nice today?
I can. It's March. There's a lot of nice things going on in the college sports world. And I will say something nice about Arch Madness and the mid-major tournaments. I attended the Missouri Valley Tournament semis and final Saturday, Sunday in St. Louis. Probably the fourth or fifth time I've gone to that tournament. And it's just awesome. It is great. It is, you know, good fan bases that come from all over the Midwest. And they have a big party in St. Louis. It's always been in St. Louis. The tradition there is strong. It's kind of a mix between high major, low major. It's a mid major. You got a big arena where the Blues play. They don't fill the upper deck, but they fill the lower deck. And, you know, there's people there. I met a guy from Cedar Rapids who takes his vacation days every year to come help work the tournament. So it's got a little bit of the mom and pop element, you know, volunteers and people that come in that have always come in from Peoria, from Terre Haute, from Springfield, Missouri, et cetera. And it's fun atmosphere, but there's also then the urgency of the potential one-bid league. This really shouldn't be a one-bid league, but you get desperate basketball, like Bradley playing for their lives on Saturday in the semifinals against Drake and had him down and couldn't keep him down and end up losing. And, you know, it's the classic scene, the losing coach is wheeling around yelling at the conference brass, like, ah, you're, the refs are favoring the team that you think can get into the tournament, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's that kind of dynamic. It was almost Greg Marshall-esque watching Brian Wardle yell at everyone about the officiating. And like what happened in the A-Sun last week, the quarterfinal games were completely bonkers. You had buzzer beaters left and right. You had the coach at Austin Peay wearing camo pants and combat boots jumping up on the scorer's table after they won a game. So I love the conference tournaments, especially the mid-major ones where there's that huge sense of urgency to win them. That's my say something nice.
Ross?
I want to say something nice about the SEC men's basketball tournament. You know, we talked about the SEC women's tournament with South Carolina and LSU and the personalities and the fight and all that stuff. Plenty of personalities to go around in SEC men's basketball as well. This thing could be bonkers in Nashville. Starts Wednesday. Yeah, you have a couple of first rounds game there. But, you know, Tennessee won the league. Kentucky is the 2 seed. You've got Alabama, Nate Oates in there. You've got Auburn and Bruce Pearl. South Carolina's come out of nowhere this year. You got a team on the bubble in Texas A&M and maybe Mississippi State as well, maybe needing a win or two. Exciting tournament. Look forward to it. Should be fun.
All right, I'm going to say something nice about Jamal Shedd, star guard, Big 12 player of the year for the Houston Cougars. The whole Houston Cougar program under Kelvin Sampson has been absolutely fantastic. And I don't really think there were a whole lot of doubts about them anymore because they had made a Final Four, they made a regional final, but it was still, oh, you're going 33-4, you're in the AAC. Yeah, they just go in the Big 12 and blow the doors off the thing. They beat Kansas by 30 this weekend. 30. Kansas needs to get back to being a victim. They need Adidas to start victimizing them again. Isn't it funny how college basketball is all of a sudden a little new blood in college basketball now that Nike and Adidas don't control all the rosters?
Hey,
who wants NIL? It's terrible. The transfer portal. It was much better when just two shoe companies did it, right? Oh, I'm sorry. That didn't happen. Everyone was a victim. I'll tell you who's not a victim. Houston Cougars. 28-3. They're arguably the number one seed overall. I don't think it really matters. But Jamal Shedd is such a great college basketball player. And I said in all the things, he's only 6'1". He's not as a pro. I don't know. That's a tough height in pro basketball. But this guy does everything well. He is just old school, great player. Senior, great decision making. Shooting, penetration, defense, the whole thing. Total leadership. I have watched a lot of Houston this year. You have to be tough as nails to play for Houston. And Kelvin Sampson, you have to defend. This guy is like one of, this is, I think, if you have not watched a lot of college basketball, watch Houston. They make a big run. I think America is going to absolutely love the way Jamal Shedd plays basketball. He is representative of a whole really good team of how they play basketball. It's the if you're like, I don't really know about the NBA, it's so much offense, it's no one's playing, they play defense here. This kid's just a great basketball player, and good for them and good for him.
I went down and did a big Houston story last year, and you talked to Shedd, and it was like, oh, this guy's the heartbeat. I mean, like, it just jumps out of him. He's the leader. He's the maturity, he's the energy, I mean everything. He is a complete extension of Kelvin Sampson. So you chose wisely there.
I've covered their a couple of their runs in the NCAA tournament the last 2 or 3 years, and I don't know that I've ever seen a team play harder, especially defensively, in my life than his Houston teams lately. It's incredible.
Yeah, they're vicious.
All right, there you have it. Say something nice. Actually do it. March Madness edition. Thanks to Prime Video. Find your happy place and take the stress out of streaming with Prime Video. All right. People's Court time. We have two. We have a lot. A lot of stuff's been getting sent to us. Good job, people.
Yes. Thank you.
Good job,
yes.
People.
People doing people. Their best to keep us updated.
We like people.
When the Daily Mail isn't there, everyone else is.
It's coming around. Right. There's a lot of Kate. Kate's doing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
She's hiding. Divorcing. Yeah. I don't know. Kate, a lot of Kate. Yeah. But that's all right. This is from NBC News. Wow, reputable.
Two of America's iconic chain eateries are set to combine forces. Literally, IHOP, the International House of Pancakes. The arrogance. Love
very
it.
Cosmopolitan.
The audacity to name yourself the International House of Pancakes. Mostly located underneath a interstate overpass somewhere, but that's okay. The International House of Pancakes and Applebee's, which people just write songs about now. IHOP and Applebee's.
They're combined?
Yes. They have begun opening dual-branded locations, combining back-of-the-house cooking areas and blending front-of-the-house dining areas. Though with discrete entrances. I don't know what that means.
Is this like a KFC Taco Bell?
Yeah.
It's the same premise?
Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins, right?
Wow. Let's hope the ingredients don't get crossed over here, because these are two different places.
Eight prototypes of the concept have been done at international locations. Oh, you know what? I stand corrected then on the IHOP.
See? Come on.
Most recently... Lyon,
Interstate
Mexico.
House of Pancakes. It's international.
Interstate House of Pancakes. The idea is to reduce costs, no kidding, while maximizing revenue. Well, that's his business. At breakfast, when there are more IHOP customers, customers can be seated in the Applebee's area and vice versa at dinner. IHOP dinner is...
Same as IHOP breakfast.
It's coming. They also... it's close. Hundreds of Applebee's have been lost since 2017, including 46 in 2023. RIP. Rest in power, Applebee's. But this may save it. So, Pat 40, intrigued? Intrigued or no?
The worried tone in your voice. Hundreds of Applebee's have been lost. What are we going to do about this? There's global warming and there's a loss of Applebee's. Oh, my God.
You go to the Chili's across the street. That's what you do. Right. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's
O'Charlie's,
happening.
Bennigan's, whatever. Yeah, apostrophe S something. My concern here is this. The one constant with IHOP is that there is syrup on the tables. Yep. Like it's stuck to the tables, right? Nobody can get open and close the little syrup bottles, right? And so you just end up with syrup everywhere. I think that could be a deal breaker here. Applebee's is going to, be having their baby back ribs plates stuck to the table by the syrup, the boneless wings or whatever. It's not going to end well from that standpoint. So you're either going to need a commitment from IHOP to take care of the syrup or the deal's going to blow up and we're going to lose more Applebee's.
I have two thoughts. One is similar to Pat's. IHOP is always, the tables are always dirty. And Applebee's is a lot cleaner, so I'm not sure how that's going to work. I still think Waffle House kicks their ass. I think you can bring Applebee's in, you can bring Chili's, you can bring BW3's, you can bring whatever you want in, and Waffle House is just going to beat your ass anyway. So jump the scorers table. It's like Applebee's is jumping the scorers table to try to help out its little brother, IHOP, and I don't think it matters.
Yeah, that Waffle House is tough.
Very tough. So I can't see the downside. Whatever.
Well, unless they're whipping up the Bourbon Street steak and all of a sudden they spill pancake batter something. Yeah.
Accidentally put whipped cream on the steak or whatever.
Yeah.
I have faith in the workers. I have faith in the workers.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Do you? Well, trying to be populist.
By the way, Dan, live reading social media, Joseph Duarte, the hardworking Houston Chronicle beat writer. You mentioned Jamal Sheed earlier. I'm jumping back to a previous conversation. Kelvin Santum's giving a news conference right now, and Sheed is talking to the press right now, and Shed is talking to the press right now, and someone asked him what's the worst thing that Kelvin Sampson has ever like yelled at him, or called him, and he said, quote, "You're softer than puppy in the rain." There you go. Kelvin that's Sampson a good one. Never heard of that one before. Never that's heard not, of that one.
Kelvin's got a million of them.
favorite Kelvin thing was when they fired Bob Knight at Indiana and they brought in, because Bob Knight was too intense and, you know, fly off the handle and I don't know what. All the reasons they got rid of. And they brought in Kelvin Sampson, who obviously had his own issues at Indiana. There, people get very angry at the phone calls. But that guy's more intense than Bob Knight.
Kelvin's hard-boiled.
He is. I mean, it was a very similar coach. It wasn't like they brought in some just totally different. It was like they're kind of the same. I mean,
there's at least there's no video of Kelvin Sampson attempting to choke one of his players, at least.
There's no video. Yeah, there's no video. No. I mean, yeah. He wasn't throwing chairs, but I mean, it was just funny. It was like, well, we got to get rid of this guy, so we'll bring in. I was like, it's kind of, I mean, kind of similar. Kind of similar. All right, final one. This pod's gone on too long. A man in Green Bay with a one-of-a-kind first name was taken into custody after an alleged disturbance on the city's east side. According to a criminal complaint obtained by Local 5, 42-year-old D's Nuts Kroll.
Oh, come on.
D's Nuts.
Dan.
This is Channel 5. Was arrested following an incident involving a gun. About 10 p.m., officers were sent to 900 block East Walton Street. The officers got on the scene. Two people were brought to a squad car, placed it back. Additionally, they took Kroll into custody. He appeared to be highly intoxicated. You might be surprised to find out. His Wisconsin ID card listed him as D's Nuts Lee Kroll.
He's 42, you said?
That's what it says.
Well, that was not his birth name then, because nobody was the phrase D's Nuts did yeah, not exist that, in 1982. So
I'm just saying, this is the story. I'm just reading the news here, Pat. Just reading the news.
You're just aggregating.
I'm an aggregator. Harsher sentence or lighter for this gun charge?
I think lighter. You know what? I mean, if you're willing to go through life with that as your name, I think you've already taken yourself on. You've taken on enough of a burden there. So I'm gonna be a little bit lenient on you at this point.
The penalty here should be change your name, dummy. Right?
Like, again,
you want to either go to jail for X amount or you change your name. All right. You got to have one or the other. Right. You can have your name, but then you have jail time. Or you don't have your name and you can get out.
You go back to being called Fred.
Yeah. Well, it's going to happen when he's in the pen and he tells the first like bunk mate, you know, yeah. Hey, my name's D's Nuts. You know, so somebody's going to end up getting a little black and blue.
I don't know.
There's no respect for that in prison, Dan. Come on. Inmate 109-46-72. D's Nuts.
I don't know what. I need follow up. Now I'm reading it on Yahoo News. I mean, like, we're very reputable.
Great. I'm glad we've dropped. We got to that.
Oh, hell yeah. I need more. There's now an Instagram page, free D's Nuts Kroll. What happened? Why?
Ongoing saga. I can feel it.
Yes. Somebody in Green Bay, do some work for us here, please. All right. That's our show, clearly. This show, wow, we are everywhere. All over. We'll be back later in the week. So keep subscribing, sharing us with social media, listening to us, all that. And thank you to Prime Video for presenting this episode. Talk to you later.